This is CliffCentral.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Angus here. I'm standing in for Adrian, who stepped out with the Spania leadership team. Welcome to the Business Masterclass section of the show. This week, we're going to be talking with SJ Pretorius. He's a business coach with Uber Equity Coaching and Mentoring, also part of the part-time faculty with USB Ed. And we're going to be talking about the whole principle of using joint ventures, alliances, and partnerships to help your business grow. Joining me in studio is Ellis Mnyando.
As always. Welcome back, Richard.
Thanks, Ellis. Did you miss me last Monday?
Yeah, tell us all about Beijing.
All about China. Welcome to China. SJ, thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. I think, you know, one of the reasons for us looking at this topic is the question of growth is on everybody's mind. It's always an issue that plays on everybody's mind. How to get growth out of a business. If I just relate my recent experience of the last 10 days, I spent a little bit of time in China, in Shanghai, Beijing, a few other places in between. And boy, all I can say is if you want to see growth, go into an environment like China. You walk into a business that 5 years ago occupied one floor of a manufacturing block. 5 years later, they're all five floors and they're looking for space next door. And you go, okay, this manufacturing sector is really, really happening. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that kind of growth in anybody locally in South Africa. So, yeah, it makes you wonder.
Growth on steroids, yeah. That's China.
Growth on steroids. That's very true. So, yeah, I think every small business has this challenge of how do I get my business to grow? And obviously one of the logical things is to consider going into some sort of partnership or joint venture with another entity. And that's where this whole question arises of, you know, should I do this or shouldn't I? And if I do this, what should I be considering? So, Isha, just maybe as a starting point, just give us a little bit of insight in terms of, I mean, when we talk of a joint venture, a strategic alliance, a partnership, what are we talking about? What are the, let's call it the textbook definitions of those things.
Good afternoon, Richard, and thank you for having me on the show. A joint venture, as simply defined by Google, I didn't go into Merriam or Webster Dictionary, is a commercial enterprise undertaken jointly by two or more parties which otherwise retain their distinct identities. Okay. And then by contrast, a strategic alliance would be an agreement between two or more parties to pursue a set of agreed upon objectives needed while remaining independent organizations. This form of cooperation lies between mergers and acquisitions and organic growth. And then lastly, what you asked about is a partnership. Instead of being a partner or partners where you can quote, we should go on working together in partnership, becomes a saying that is bandied around. It's an association more loosely based on two or more people as partners rather than entities. I hope that sheds a bit of light there.
Okay, so I think that, you know, we often, and entities may be saying to themselves, well, do I get into a partnership or a joint venture with somebody, and they don't quite know what the fundamental differences are, and so perhaps maybe an easier way to define things is to just ask a question. So what are some of the benefits and challenges of each of these types of scenarios? So what are the benefits and challenges of a joint venture, a strategic alliance, and a partnership? Take us through and maybe some examples that you can think of, some practical examples that you've seen.
Certainly. In terms of thinking about small to medium enterprise in an environment like South Africa where entrepreneurship is often thrust upon people as opposed to a logical choice. A joint venture would be you combining forces from your small business with someone that shares the same type of customers. So you have a similar customer base. You can exploit that customer base without selling the same thing twice. In other words, the actual product is non-competing.
So you're looking at complementary products.
Yeah. Either complementary or diverse products so that they can complement or they don't clash. The definition would rather be that there's no clash or competition clash. Created. And then if you look at a strategic alliance, a suitable example would be a business coach like myself that teams up with somebody that is working a lot with small businesses. I happen to focus on entrepreneurs and not the corporate market. So if I'm after a lot of entrepreneurs that somebody would have as a client, I would typically in the professional industries go look at a lawyer that starts companies up for people, sets up contracts, or something like an auditor, somebody who does the books for a myriad of small business people. And the business coaching service can become a value add to that person's business, which makes the alliance more strategic than when it is merely the printer and the graphic designer, for instance, getting together for a joint venture.
Okay. Okay.
Richard.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, we spoke about, you know, scaling a business. I just wanted to know, would these options be part of that, you know, process to scale, to grow, to get to the next level?
In my opinion, definitely. If you are, as a business coach running out there, and you're a one-man show yourself, you're in that same SME bracket, you've got a limited number of hours in a week that you can be coaching. So when you combine hundreds of clients from a strategic alliance that you can put in one room for a high-impact coaching session where everybody benefits as opposed to just one person on the other side of the table, it exactly aligns with scaling.
Okay, fantastic.
Now, I mean, if I look at these and I'm starting to see the kind of comfortable causal link, but I mean, how do these different let's call them strategies for growth. Maybe that's a term we can use collectively, these strategies for growth. How do they actually enable growth? I mean, is it just about the customer base? I mean, you talked earlier about you share a similar customer base, but you're non-competitive in terms of the product delivery. Is it just about getting to more customers, or does it go beyond that?
It's about a reciprocal value add. Because you would want to be offering your own customer base as well as exploiting the partner's customer base or the joint venture person or the alliance's customer base. So exploiting in the South African context has a bit of a negative connotation.
I was going to say, ooh. careful with that word, choice of words.
I grew up in business in America and the term is bandied around as much as you would be mining gold. It's not exploiting, it's leveraging.
Leveraging.
Thank you.
Well, that's politically correct. Yeah, the political comment would be we are leveraging, otherwise known as exploiting or taking from. Okay. So, but I think the key thing here is enhancing the value proposition. So, you know, if the customer can't see the value in the joint venture or partnership, well, then it's probably not a joint venture or partnership that's going to have any sort of longevity. If the customer sees massive value add between these two environments working closely together, you know, it works for them. I mean, I can think of some very nice complementary businesses that I've seen over time where that strategic alliance really, really works really well. And you think
those are exceptions, though, not the norm.
Well, I was going to say,
right?
And the scary part is where you see businesses that are trying really hard to operate together, but you look at them from a customer perspective, and you think, I can see how you guys thought this would work, but practically, I just don't connect the dots. And I think sometimes, you know, some of these things are sometimes born out in thinking and boardroom level, but when it comes to the practicality, nobody bothers to do the customer test. What's your experience in that space?
What I found is that there's two levels being thrown around. So a couple of people getting together with reasonably sized organizations that want to compete for a tender or at that level of cashing in on commerce are commonly known as joint ventures. Now, we're not talking about that here. Obviously, that's part of it, but I'm talking about the everyday, more obvious synergies that you can leverage when you talk to, for instance, a graphic designer, a web designer, or a web developer rather, graphic designer, web developer, and then a printing house or a print shop, that they are the corner stores, they do digital copies, they print the occasional booklet, and these guys get together so that together they gain more on the principle of synergy. And these happen far more often and far more informal than one would expect. Down to the point that if you actually focus down and say, I'm going to use those people in my business. So I'm going to use a graphic designer. I'm going to use a web developer. I'm going to use the printer. What else am I going to use? And look at maybe one or two more and put together a collective of five of these organizations. Go and discuss with each of them or together when you get to that point. But offer that you will change the way you do your business so that any business in their sphere, you'll already channel to them. And then they must commit to do the same. So there's already a tremendous reciprocal effect in how they work together just with their normal everyday spend on getting out in the market. And then they escalate that to becoming an offering on maybe even a single brochure to the SME out there.
Now, SJ, I must break this to you, but you sound like you're coaching from a customer perspective to the supplier there. There's not many customers out there that get the collective together. Although I must say, I must maybe not be so harsh. I have had instances where I've had suppliers and I've introduced them to other suppliers in my who work with me and said, the two of you should really get together and work together on X. So yeah, I guess it does happen when you're in business. But I guess it's those marriages that are made in the minds of the customer rather than the marriages that are made in the mind of, let's call it, the entrepreneur per se, absolutely, that are actually going to work. If the customer can see the logical connection and realizes that they want these two things to work well together, then there's probably a good value proposition sitting behind that partnership or engagement.
Well, what I like what SJ is talking about are these everyday synergies. Of course, you know, there's these terms that we've talked about, you know, joint ventures and so forth, but ultimately, SJ, you agree that today, these days, we're hearing a lot about collaboration. At the most simplest of defining what we talk about people collaborating. To the extent that now you hear more about competition, where companies who ordinarily will be rivals, find one niche where they can complement each other to pursue a particular market. So in your view, what better enables the sort of, Richard calls it marriage. I don't want to call it that.
Collaboration.
What better enables that? Because obviously you'll be dealing with cultures, you'll be dealing with expectations. How is the basis for this collaboration to succeed best laid out?
I find that when you throw people together and you exploit other synergies, first of all, for instance, people go to a summit together, they meet each other at a major summit or at a conference, and they start understanding that although their products doesn't logically go together, they share a customer. Mm-hmm. What happens there is that something clicks in the way they think about collaboration. So you've got to look for the non-obvious collaborators. So it's not the graphic designer and the web developer only. Go beyond that. I had an instance last week where somebody's bringing in fragrances based on Bach remedies from Europe. And there was a person in the room that is selling high-end obscure brands, but very high-end brands online. And the two of them could collaborate, but only after severe coaxing and coaching, because they did not see the overlap until you realized the exposure from the one to the other and the reciprocal value. So it's to look beyond the obvious.
So we talk about business unusual.
Business unusual. I like that.
Unusual.
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
And then there's a breakthrough. Something happens. I find that a prerequisite is that the person that starts looking for this has got to be a networker. You can't sit in a silo. You can't sit alone. You've got to learn to network and understand networking correctly and understand the difference between being a hunter and being a farmer in the market. Because if you hunt, you're going to very quickly deplete the customers that's willing to listen to you. But if you farm, you are nurturing relationships. And with those relationships, the same thing happens to the collaborators that you meet. And that's where
the magic happens.
Some magic happens, okay. Exactly. Mm.
Now, I mean, when we talk about the magic of a joint venture, I mean, the way to get this started, you've spoken about and you mentioned that there were two ideal types of questions or key questions that one needed to ask when you want to get this going. Do you want to let's just flesh out what are those questions, those two ideal questions that you want to be asking?
So the first question would be, you would have to ask, who are my ideal clients? And you would have to have gone through a proper target market exercise. And I want to stress here that everybody with a pulse is not necessarily your client. Remember that everybody that actually fogs up a mirror when held under their nose is not your client. You've got to really figure out, who do you go to? Who's your ideal client? Who's the guy that spends repeatedly with you? And from that viewpoint, start comparing with the same preparation of on the other party's behalf, comparing your ideal clients to make sure that the overlap exists.
So you're looking to understand your ideal client and making sure that there's that commonality between the two of you.
Perfectly. That's well put. Because when you share that ideal client, it would be that much more relatively easy to sell to them again.
Mm. Now, I mean, so perhaps I say to you, I've got a similar type of target market to you. Let's go into business, you know, let's get into a joint venture together. But just having a similar target market doesn't necessarily tick the box, because question number two, I guess, is all important is, well, it's not really a great partnership if you don't bring something to the table.
That's it. So the second question would be, who else already has access or a database to my ideal client? And the question has got to be, the answer to that's got to be true on your own side as well.
Yeah. So if you don't, if you're currently, you know, let's call it fresh out of clients, this is not the way that'll give you a better response or a better outcome in the bigger picture.
Certainly not. You've got to be sure that you've got a running concern, you've got a healthy running concern, and then with the ideal clients out there, you've got people frequently coming back or frequently coming out of the marketing initiative that you are doing on that ideal target market.
Mm. Now, I mean, how do you go about building relationships with other people that already have existing relationships? So let's do a bit of a practical example here. Ellis and I get into a joint venture together. We don't necessarily compete, but we have a target market that works same. So we tick all of those good boxes. I've got my client list. Ellis has got his client list. So we tick that box. How do we then take this forward practically? Because here's where I have a risk. I may know Ellis fairly well. We may have checked each other out in this, let's call it, due diligence process of deciding who we're going to do, that we're going to do business together. But how do I practically know that exposing my, let's call it, client list, my gold mine of opportunities to Ellis isn't going to necessarily close down some of my opportunities that I've necessarily hunted or farmed out over all the years, and vice versa? I mean, how does Ellis trust me with his client list in this lovely joint venture? No, Ellis, you wouldn't trust me with
his client list. I guess the other way to ask your question, Richard, is how many lawyers do we need?
Oh, Ellis, please sign the shareholder agreement.
Hopefully none. What it's about is obviously also managing your risk. So you've got to be careful that you don't necessarily hand over your database or the control to your database to this new partner. There's got to be a track record, a proven track record of earning that trust. Hmm. Dr. Ivan Meisner, a well-known author on networking, talks about three principles. Talks about visibility, credibility, and profitability. And that those three things are a process over time. That you gain visibility first, And only through credibility can you gain trust. And from the trust forward, you can start earning profitability. And it's about earning the right every step of the way for me. So I would not let anybody, not Alice, not Richard, free on my database. I would gain control of my database and advertise on their behalf. So we would have to carefully collaborate.
So you'd take my message into your client base and you'd expect me to take your message into mine.
Exactly. So retain that control.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing. If there's often this debate, and it happens in businesses large and small, who, and I'm using this in inverted commas here, owns the client. And I guess when you're into that joint venture, partnership, alliance, whatever it may be, it's really important to make sure that you never let go of ownership of your client, because ultimately you're accountable for your relationship with them.
Exactly.
And you can't pass that across to somebody else. Now, let's just for a moment talk a little bit about the whole concept of a strategic alliance. And I mean, I guess some of the principles that we've spoken about really, really do work across the two. But I guess the important thing when you've got an alliance going, the important thing is to make sure that you've got a value proposition that works for both you and the counterparty. How do you establish, it sounds like a little bit like speed dating, like kind of whipping around the environment that you're in, perhaps, your collective environment, your chamber of commerce, whatever, looking for those strategic alliances that work. Sit down, chat to somebody, try and figure out what they do, let them figure out what you do, look for the opportunity and say, okay, well, cool, I want to have a much longer chat with you, or no, next. I mean, how do you find though and identify those right people to have alliances with? Because some of the alliances are not kind of straightforward and logical.
Absolutely. What the thing to do is your due diligence process never stops. And also the speed dating approach or the speed networking approach is not enough, other than maybe a first round identifier of potential similarities or synergies. You've got to really sit down at least an hour with the other person and follow a process where you are both exposing your weak areas, your strong areas, both prepared to come to the party and talk freely. Mm. And only once those initial hurdles of maybe this, maybe that, people's been bitten and obviously twice shy about a lot of things. So it's gaining that initial trust that the person will say, but okay, I'm prepared to go for this. I found that between different industries, it's not merely just cultural, it's almost a linguistic issue. If I were to, in Australia or in North America, offer an accountant a commission or a kickback or anything like that on my fees, and I would presume ethically it's got an impact here in South Africa, Richard, you can certainly comment on that, it is considered completely illegal. There's a Secret Commissions Act that they cannot act against. So you cannot go and blow the potential of a relationship by offering the wrong thing to the wrong business partner.
And I think that's a really important learning in terms of an alliance, is understand what you can and can't do an alliance around, and where it works and where it doesn't, and what your frameworks are. I mean, we now know, for example, from the codes, the BBBEE codes, that fronting is a criminal offense. I always say, understand what gets you into an orange jumpsuit and make sure you stay far away from those actions. The reality is, what is fronting, for example? If you're going to get into a strategic alliance with somebody around something that operates in that space, for example, best you understand and know what the frameworks are and what you can do effectively as a joint venture partner and bring value to each other, and what you shouldn't be doing. So, yes, my partner comes to one meeting a year and he's a shareholder in the company, and that's why you know, we have a 50% BBB rating. Well, you know, sorry, that the value add and commensurate values and all the rest doesn't seem to wash in that one. So it's important that you understand the frameworks within your within which you operate, commission structures, payments, that type of thing, all very important. Okay, now I guess ultimately when you're into an alliance, you want to ultimately create a win-win scenario for everybody. That's what you always want to get. And we talk about win-wins all the time. But how do you practically make sure that there's a win-win for everybody? I mean, just give me some thoughts that we could use.
You should flesh this out. For instance, we were talking earlier about I'll be offering your services or products to my database. You'll be doing the same reciprocally. It's not about either of us writing that letter, that offer, that initial offer that goes out to the customers in isolation. It's about collaborating about how customer-centric we compose that message so that it fits in with your linguistic, ethical, cultural picture. It fits in with my linguistic, ethic, and cultural picture. And therefore, then only evaluating along the lines of how customer-centric it is, because the ultimate value should be the third win in the situation, and it should be the win for the customer. You win, I win, and the customer wins from this relationship.
That's a very valid point. Well, that wraps it up. Thank you, SJ. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for your time. Just if you would like to join our live SME studio audience, please email Kevin at leadershipplatform, that's double P, leadershipplatform.com, to join our live studio audience. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is CliffCentral.com.